We're going to begin a study this morning in the book of Amos. The word Amos means burden, or burden bearer. So evidently he was bearing the burden that God placed upon him of going to Israel and prophesying against that particular nation. This, for a long time, when I began studying the Bible 40, 50 years ago, I mean the prophets, Amos was probably my favorite for a long time. I still love the book. Amos was steps out of the unseen, know nothing about his past except what he tells us. He just steps out on the stage and is the first great reformer. God called him from Tekoa to go up to Bethel and prophesy against Israel. Now he was of Judah. Israel had broken off from Judah. So certainly to send a man from Judah up there to preach to them would be very displeasing to them. That's what God did. He was a very strong, stern character. He was a man that very little mercy or kindness shown in his preaching. It was all a system of cold, hard justice. They left God. Now then it was time for God to act against them and for them to either repent or perish, one or the other. At any rate, he went up and boldly declared his message. I think you too will admire him and will, like I have, come to appreciate him very, very much. He tried to reform the nation. He pointed out the wickedness and corruption of them. But before I get to that, let me get back now to the age of the time. It's generally thought by all scholars that he prophesied somewhere between 760 and 750 B.C. Most of them would take 755 as the most probable date. So 755, now that, our last study was in Jonah. Jonah prophesied somewhere by 780. So this would be, oh, some 20, 25 years after Jonah's prophesied. Now that means then that Assyria, during that period, had been in a state of depression and had been in a state of war and internal upheaval. Right? But now, 10 years later, 745, Tiglath-Pileser became the ruler of Assyria, and he tried to build up the nation by conquering all the nearby nations or peoples. Well, now whether God revealed it to Amos that that's what he was going to do or not, Amos does not mention Assyria. Now, Hosea does. Hosea was from 5 years later than and we'll get to him next after this. But at any rate, he was later. But he mentioned Assyria as the one that God would use in his judgment against Israel. So this then would be a time, that was a period when Assyria was in that condition. That gave Israel and Judah an opportunity to build up. Now, here in Israel to the north, coming along somewhere, maybe not like this, Bethel was in it there. Up here is Samaria, the capital. Here's Jerusalem, the capital here. Here's Tekoa. Down here we'll talk about in just a moment or two. Now, during this time, Jeroboam the second. Now, we've talked about Jeroboam the first. He was the first ruler of Samaria. Jeroboam the second was ruling at this time. He ruled for about 40 years in Israel. Now, Uzziah was the king down here in Judah. He reigned for 51 or 2 years. He reigned for about 41 or 2 years, something like that. So these two men, both of them were great kings. They were great military men. And Jeroboam was a wicked man. He did not worship Jehovah, but he worshipped the Baal, he worshipped the calf, or the calves at Bethel. But at any rate, he was a good leader. Now, he's the one that Jonah advised in his wars. I pointed out last Sunday, you remember, that Jonah prophesied during the days of Jeroboam and advised him when to strike and when not to strike. God was so using him for that. So the nation became strong militarily. It became very prosperous economically. But it became more wicked religiously. Now, remember this. I've said this before, but we're prone to forget it. Sometimes we say, well, the religious decay is a result of social decay and political decay. That isn't so. It's always religious.
It begins here with a religious decay, and that religious decay is followed by political corruption, by social corruption, and by moral decay. Right? Now, these always follow the religious decay. That's what happened in our country. Now, our religious indifference here is not the result of our social condition. Our social condition is the result of our indifference to God and to Jesus Christ. That was the beginning of it back last century when humanism began to take its control over our thinking in this nation, left God out. That's when it really we began to go down. And from the first beginning of the century, we've been going down ever since and getting worse all the time. Right? So the same thing happened in the south with Uzzah. Uzzah was a great king. He served God, except for one thing. I'll come to that later on, probably. That is when he went into the temple and burned the incense. At any rate, he was a faithful servant of God in most all ways. Now, during his period, you have the same thing happening in Judah. They become very prosperous, and it was a time of wealth and prosperity. But it was also a time when the people left God. Although Uzzah was quite faithful, the people themselves served the Baal. And so you have then a religious apostasy and decay there. Now Isaiah is going to take care of that. Isaiah 745 began the period of conquest. And in 722, Samaria fell. So here we fell at that particular time. Now, what God is trying to do is to turn these people back to him before a judgment strikes them, before we have to execute a judgment. They didn't listen to me, neither in the north nor in the south. They listened better because they lasted another 100 years. They would have gone then if they hadn't turned back to God. So I think one of the great lessons that we're going to learn from these four prophets, we're not studying Isaiah, but we will study Micah. We're very similar. One lesson we're going to learn is God, I think, always calls a people before he destroys them. I know he did that with his people, and he did it with Assyria when he sent Jonah up there. Now later on, the little book of Nahum is a prophecy against Nineveh. So now the time had come for Nineveh to be destroyed when we come down to the book of Nahum. So Nahum was a prophet of just one message, of the destruction of Nineveh. Nineveh was going to be destroyed. That's the capital of Assyria. So when we talk about Nineveh or Assyria, I'm talking about the same nation of people here. So I think, class, it's always good if we can understand the background of a book that will have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. So you have a moral and spiritual depravity in the time of the New Testament, where back in the Old, you have religious, political, social, and all that. And so one of the lessons we'll learn is God warns before he destroys. But another great lesson is, the one I've pointed out so many times, is that God will allow a nation to last only so long. Then, when it reaches a point it's no longer fit to live, then is when he destroys that nation. Always has, still is, he always will. So we need to, I think it's very helpful to us to study these prophets and try to look at our condition today in the light of the teachings of those great men. You're all servants of God. I raise up my servants, the prophets, God said, early and send them unto the nations. No, he does that. Well, that helps to understand Revelation. Now, in Revelation, you have the sounding of the trumpets before the bowls of wrath were poured out. So now God sounds a trumpet of warning to a nation or a people before he pours out the bowl of wrath upon them. I think the trumpets are sounding now in the midst of this nation. We're not listening, but trumpets are sounding. Now, unless there is a turning to God, and I see no sign of it, then the bowl of wrath will be poured out upon the nation, and it will come to a judgment that will really shake us to our knees. So I want you to remember that as time goes on. I think you'll live long enough to see it, and if you don't, why, your children will, for it's on its way. So these are some of the lessons we're going to point out. Now, I'm not going to go through the lessons of the book now. I'll wait till they get through, then go back. Now let me talk about Amos for just a moment. Now notice the first verse here, the words of Amos, who was among the herdsmen of Tekoa, which he saw concerning Israel, Israel in the days of Uzzah, king of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, 2 years before the earthquake. Now that earthquake is mentioned in Zechariah 14 and 5. That's all it said. It speaks of the earthquake. It must have been an unusually strong one, mentioned by two prophets, a good while between the two prophets, at least 100 years or more between the two prophets, 150. But they mentioned this great earthquake. That's all I know about it. That's all anybody knows. Not recorded in any of the books of the Bible except these two books. But now let me look at Tekoa. Now Tekoa was this town about 12 miles south of Jerusalem. And it's about 12 miles, Bethel is 12 miles north of Jerusalem. So here is Bethel, to which he was sent. Here's Tekoa, where he grew up. Now this country down here, and I don't remember how many miles, 12, 10, 8, maybe 18, something like that, from the Dead Sea. That country down there is a country of deep ravines and canyons. It's a very rugged country. From what I understand, I've never been there, but what I understand from reading, very similar to some of Arizona country, that's rugged, deep canyons and all that. And he was an out-of-doors man. He was a herdsman and a dresser of sycamore trees. Now this sycamore tree was a tree that bare a little fig-like fruit on there, kind of woody, had to be pinched the fruit would ripen, and were eaten only or mainly by the poor. So his work was pinching these sycamore fruits if they're not ripened, and a herdsman of a sheep called Nacash. It was a very fine wool, wanted in so many countries. If I remember, it was black wool. But now he was a herdsman and a dresser of sycamore trees. That means he lived an out-of-doors life. Now, as you read the book, when he talks about a lion and a bear and serpents and all that, it means that he's speaking from experience. He knows what it is, that. And so living an out-of-doors life like that, probably a harsh life. But at any rate, it was a life far removed from the type of life you have to the north there, at Bethel and Samaria up in there. That is a prosperous life, or a life of extravagance and luxury. So when he was the kind of man God needed, when he went up there to Bethel and prophesied against Samaria and against Bethel, he was declaring to this nation the doom because of their social injustice, because of their moral depravity, and because of their political corruption also. When he saw that, you have to understand that. He was a man that was not familiar with that from his own experience. So, well, he condemned it in no uncertain terms, called those women of Samaria kine and Bashan. That is, fat cows is what he called them, a bunch of fat cows. Well, not very complimentary. I don't think women would appreciate that much. Some women started preaching to them as a bunch of fat cows because of their luxurious life. That's what he talked to them. And when you study old Amos, you're going to either love him or you're not going to like him in one or the other. I love him. I just think he's one of the greatest of the prophets among, to me at least. And then when you talk to the people of Samaria up there about their revelry and their songs to the Baal, eating the fatty lambs and all that, he's condemning their luxurious type of life. And it's just foreign to him. And he was the kind of man you take to preach on that. Now when we come to Hosea now is altogether different. Hosea's one of his main words is loving kindness. He was a man who was more sympathetic because he lived among them there, although he condemned their sins, just as Amos did. He was more sympathetic toward the people. Well, that'll help us, I think, to maybe understand our book here. Well, he grew up there, a rough country, and he talked about the bear, he talked about the lion, he talked about the serpent, he talked about those things. So he's speaking from experience. A man who lived a harsh life. All right, so he's the man that God is sending. So he's a prophet during the days of Jeroboam, the king of Israel, and Uzziah, the king of Judah. Both were fine kings as far as military prowess was concerned. They extended the borders of both of their kingdoms. They also restored prosperity. They were very prosperous, very wealthy at that time. That's the downfall. That was the downfall. So we're going. When you read this book, I want you to think of this country. I want you to think of this country now, what it's been and what it's done with God. Now I think you'll be in a better position to judge the future of him. What's going to happen to him? Well, because I don't know. I'm expecting a judgment. From what source? I don't know. I leave that with God. I know one's coming. I know it has to, because I see the parallel between us and those nations back yonder, what God did to them, whether they were heathen nations or not. All right? So now we move on now. And he said, and he said, Jehovah will roar from Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the pastures of the shepherds shall mourn, and the top of Carmel shall wither. All right? Now, Zion was where God dwelt among his people. That's, of course, down here in Jerusalem. So here in Zion, God's going to roar from Zion, Jehovah will. That means now, he's going to utter his voice as a lion would roar and put terror in the heart of an individual. Jehovah's roar from Zion going to put terror into the hearts of the people, called them to turn back to God. But it doesn't work that way, but God gives them a chance anyway. Right? And now notice what's going to happen here. Utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the pastures of the shepherds shall mourn pastures wide, because there'll be no grass there. And the top of Carmel shall wither. Now here was Carmel. I think it's Carmel. I'm going to pronounce it Carmel, but it doesn't matter. This little mountain here that jutted out into the sea here was Mount Carmel. Now, it was top of that very green, because the moisture from the sea kept Carmel green most all the time there. And so it's going to wither also. So the beautiful greenery of Mount Carmel is going to wither along with the pastures of the sheep and the shepherds there. So here's an impending judgment. Now he takes six nations here. He begins here with Damascus. Now three of these nations over in Damascus. Here's Damascus over here. Damascus over here. And then down here is Phoenicia, the cities of Phoenicia here. Then up here is Tyre and Sidon, at the Phoenicians. The Philistines here, and Phoenicia up here, Tyre and Sidon. It's an entire day. Right, now those three cities there are not kin to Judah. So here then are the non-kin here. Here is Damascus and Tyre, that is Phoenicia here. Phoenicia here. The Philistines, I get it right there. The Philistines. Up here to the north is Phoenicia. All right, now down here to the south, then he moves on down next to Edom, and then up to Ammon, and then to Moab. Now these were kinsmen of the Jews. You remember that Edom was the twin brother of Jacob. You remember that? And then Ammon and Moab, they were the two sons by Lot. Lot, of course, was a nephew of Abraham. By the two daughters of Lot, the incestuous relationship there, when they were fleeing from Sodom and Gomorrah. Well, so you have three of these are heathen nations, no relation whatever to Israel. Three of them are related to Israel. So he begins here with Damascus. Thus saith Jehovah, for three transgressions of Damascus, yea, for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they have threshed Gilead with threshing instruments of iron. And I will send a fire into the house of Hazael, and it shall devour the palaces of Ben-Hadad. And I will break the bar of Damascus, and cut off the inhabitant from the valley of Avon, that is the valley of vanity. Avon, and that holdeth the scepter from the house of Eden, and the people of Syria shall go into captivity under Kerr, saith Jehovah. Now let's see what he is saying here. Now going back over this, first of all, for three transgressions, yea, four. Now, he uses that in all eight of these nations that he's going to talk about. For three transgressions are four. In other words, if three is a complete number and three is a perfect number, the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and so on. Now, we always think of these three. Right? The three, then, it indicates that perfection or completeness. Now, then, four would be that you've gone beyond that. You've filled up the cup of God's anger and wrath because of your sins. You've even gone beyond that. So it's not just three literally, yea, four literally. You say three or four, but it's three, the full number, that you've gone beyond. You've gone beyond that. All right, now this is Damascus. That's the one up here to the capital of Syria, up here, and this is the capital of Syria. The capital there. Now what is that crime? Now look at the crime. The crime is that of cruelty. For now he says, they threshed Gilead with threshing instruments of iron. Now here is Gilead. Gilead is this country down here that was a part of that of Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh. Remember, they took this over. So this Gilead was this fine grazing country down here south of east of Galilee. Very fine at that time. The very best grazing country of all was that in this land of Gilead. Right now, when Syria wanted to take Gilead down here, came down here, they were very cruel to the people there and threshed them with threshing instruments of iron. Well, threshing instrument, well, this is figurative or literal, I'm not sure. But a threshing instrument of iron was a heavy log with spikes driven in it that you pulled over the grain there to separate the grain from the chaff. Well, either they did that literally or it was figurative of the cruelty with which they treated the people. So here then is he judging them, the Assyrian, Damascus, because of their cruelty in dealing with the people of Gilead there in order to extend their own borders. Now notice I say they threshing instruments of iron, but I will send a fire into the house of Hazael. Hazael was a king, and there was a Ben-Hadad before this Ben-Hadad. Hazael murdered Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, in Damascus, and became the king. Now, so I'm going to destroy his palace, and this Ben-Hadad, he had a son that he named Ben-Hadad. So this is Hazael and his family. God is going to judge here, devour the palaces of Ben-Hadad. And I will break the bar of Damascus. The bar is the protecting bolt there, the bolt of the city. I mean, here's a gate again, the bolt of the city, bar and bolted there. Well, when God said, I'll destroy that, in other words, I'll destroy their protective power. What are you going to destroy there? And cut off the inhabitant from the Valley of Avon, that's the Valley of Vanity, and on down south there, from the Valley of Avon, and him that holdeth the scepter from the house of Eden. And I would say the Valley of Avon symbolized vanity. The vanity and the emptiness of their life, and here the house of Eden would be a place where they would, the rich would go for retirement or for vacations. In other words, where everything was luxurious and fine. So he's what he's going to cut off now is both the house of vanity and the house of Eden there, which is a pleasure and plenty. God's going to cut it all off from them. And the people shall go into captivity under Ker, said Jehovah. Now the word Ker means a walled city. Now that name is mentioned a time or two or three times, and nobody knows of a city by that name. But what God's saying is, you're going to go into captivity into a walled city from which they cannot escape. They'll be there as prisoners there. All right, now that's Damascus. Judged for their cruelty, inhumane treatment. All right, thus saith Jehovah, for three transgressions of Gaza, I used to pronounce Gaza, but I hear all the television, they always pronounce it Gaza. So I guess the Hebrews, the Jews pronounce it Gaza. So if I sound like I'm trying to put on the calling it Gaza, all I'm trying to do is pronounce it like they do today. So here for Gaza, yea, for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they carried away the captive, they carried away the whole people. Now these up here were cruelty, and down here at Gaza, and this is in one of the cities of the Philistines here, I just put down the city of Gaza here, here's Gaza down here, to the southeast of Jerusalem here, in Phoenicia here, this country here, Philistia. Now there were four of those cities, he mentioned four, and a fifth, they were back in the early days of Samson, there were five of these Philistine cities, but now then, there are four of them named here, that means one of them probably been destroyed. And notice he mentions four, and I look at them first. I'm not turning away the captive, because they delivered the whole people up to Edom, but I will send a fire on the wall of Gaza, and it shall devour the palaces thereof. And I will cut off the inhabitants from Ashdod, that was the second city, and him that holdeth the scepter from Ashkelon, and I will turn my hand against Ekron, and the remnant of the Philistines shall perish, saith the Lord Jehovah. Now the other one was Gath. Now Gath is mentioned a number of times in other earlier writing, so apparently Gath had been destroyed by now. It was only Gaza and Ashkelon and Ashdod and Ekron were the four at this particular time. Now, those now there's for slavery. slave trade. So they sold the whole people to Edom. That indicates flash. Now here, the Edomites down here. Now here's Edom down here. Alright? Now, the Edomites, they were taking the whole people. That is, apparently, they were going to take a whole village, maybe of Israelites. We're not told, but the indication is they were Israelites. So they would go in here and take a whole village of Israelites and sell them to the Edomites, who then would sell them into slavery, sell them as slaves to other nations or peoples. So there then was the sin of slavery, which is to take your fellow man, enslave him, then sell him to others. Now, whoever it was that bought the black people over here and sold them as slaves, I've forgotten. I used to know when I studied history, I knew what it was. I think they were mostly English, I don't know. But at any rate, now I think we are paying the price of enslaving those people. And those that bought them and sold them paid the price. Now, I think the main price that we paid was the Civil War. It was, 600,000 men was killed in that war, something like that. It was a tremendous amount. I felt confident, since I've studied the Bible, that that was simply God's judgment against this nation for enslaving people. But certainly the ones who captured them, brought them over and sold them, probably more guilty, whoever they were, I'm sure that they've been judged also. But you can't do these things, get by with God. You're going to pay the price after a while. Long to enslave people. Came from Adam. We all have the same right to life and the pursuit of happiness and all that. At any rate, their sin was a sin of slave trade. That was God's, or the Philistines here. And now he moves from there up to Tyre. Thus saith Jehovah, for three transgressions of Tyre, yea, for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they delivered up the whole people to Edom, and remembered not the brotherly covenant, but I will send a fire on the wall of Tyre, and it shall devour the palaces thereof. So here's Tyre up here, which is to the north here of them. That was the capital. Tyre here was the capital of Phoenicia. Now they were great sea people. Here was a range of mountains come down here. Well, the Phoenicians couldn't go back inland to farming because there was just a narrow strip there that they lived on the coast. And then there's the ocean before them, the Mediterranean Sea. So they turned to trade. Now you will notice that theirs is the same sin as that of the Philistines down here. They captured a whole people and sold them to the Edomites. So the Edomites then were in the slave business. But now notice he said, and they forgot what? They developed a whole people there and remembered not the brotherly covenant. Probably that refers to the covenant between Hiram, the king of Phoenicia, and David. Remember, they made a covenant there, and both of them held to that covenant of peace between them and right treatment to each other. But now then, the Phoenicians forgot that brotherly covenant. It may be a covenant among themselves, I don't know, but I don't think so. I think it was a covenant that they made with David, and they've forgotten that covenant. So as a result of that now, they're taking the Jews, the Israelites, selling them down here to the Edomites, who then are selling them to others, and they're the middleman in the slave trade there. I don't remember who the main ones were in the slave trade in this country. I haven't studied American history in so long, slipped my memory. Anybody remember? Well, at any rate, these are the three here. These are the three that had no relationship to the Jews. Damascus, Philistines, and the Phoenicians. After the Syrians, Phoenicians, and the Philistines, rather, and the Phoenicians. They had no kinship. Now comes Edom, and Ammon, and Moab. Now they were relatives of the Jews. Let's see what he says about them. Thus said Jehovah, for three transgressions of Edom, yea, for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because he did pursue his brother with a sword, and he cast off all pity, and his anger did tap perpetually. Now his brother would be the Jews, the Hebrews. They were brothers, because they were descendants of Jacob. Edomites, descendant of Edom, twin brothers there. All right? Now what did they do? They pursued them. So I think that explains this matter here. Now what they were doing was trying to restore these up here, was taking them here
and slaves taking them here. And the both of them here were selling them down here to the Edomites. And the Edomites then, the middleman then, they were pursuing a brother trying to capture them, that they might sell them into slavery. Well, so there's a slave trade also. Now notice a little further here. I will not turn away the punishment thereof. He that pursue his brother with a sword, and he cast off all pity, and his anger did tear perpetually, and he kept his wrath forever. But I will send the fire upon Teman, and he shall devour the palaces of Bozrah. Now Teman was way down here, about here on the mountain. Down here, the southernmost city and the capital probably at the time. Bozrah was up here somewhere. There was one time the capital. So Bozrah and Teman were the two strongest cities of the Edomites, and each of them had served as the capital of Edom at some time, one time or another. So now God said, I'm going to destroy them. I know what he's going to do to them. God says here, he kept not his wrath, and I'll send the fire upon Teman, and it's devour the palaces of Bozrah. So we're going to bring them to naught, going to destroy them. God's judgment against them. Well, now, don't you imagine as old Amos was preaching this, I didn't hear those Jews sitting around now, amen, Brother Amos, preach on. We like that. We like that kind of preaching. You're telling us what God's going to do with all these nations. That's fine. I want them to destroy every one of them. So they were saying, hey, you hear them saying, amen, Brother Amos, preach on now. Well, he does. So he now turns here to Ammon. Now, Ammon, we're up here to the north, somewhere about over here, the Ammonites over here, they took the land, some of this land here. Here were the Ammonites up here. They didn't take that land. They took the other land, others here. Here's Ammon over here, and here's Moab down here. The little line coming across here, here's Moab here. I said, you've got the Ammonites and the Moabites now, and the Edomites, they're all kinfolks. But they're all hated by the Israelites. I now know, thus saith Jehovah, for three transgressions of the children of Ammon, yea, for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they have ripped up the women with child of Gilead, that they may enlarge their border. Now, they did the same thing, you see, that the Damascenes did. They cruelly treated them with these thrashing instruments. Now, here the Ammonites, what they do? Here when they're conquering the land there, see a woman there bearing a child, and they rip her up, watch the fetus fall on the ground. Can't imagine anything more cruel than that, the way of treatment. And that's the way they were treating the Gileadites. Here, the people here today, too, were trying to conquer here. They're like the Syrians. The Gileadites were catching it from both directions. But the cruelty of the conquerors would bring about their end. We move on from that now. I'm not trying to, because you have ripped up the women with child of Gilead, that they may enlarge their border. That's what they were after, enlarge the territorial border, and very cruelly treating the captives. But I will kindle a fire in the wall of Rabbah, and it shall devour the palaces thereof. The shouting in Rabbah, with Gilead, Ramoth Gilead, I guess that's right, Ramoth Gilead, another place we call it, Rabbah. They shall devour the palace of thereof with shouting in the day of battle, with a tempest, so in the day of the whirlwind, a tempest and a cyclone, and their king shall go into captivity, he and his princes together, saith Jehovah. Alright, now so here he's going to destroy the Ammonites also, and destroy their city and carry them into captivity. Now he moves on to Moab, and I want to look at him, but again, it's for cruelty. They're very cruel there. Well, that ought to teach us a lesson. We read about cruelty in different nations and some places in this country here. Well, Hussein, that Arab fellow, he seems to be an unusually cruel guy. But I don't know whether he's any worse than the rest of them over there. I don't know. We only know what the newspapers want us to know. I don't know how much faith you put in what they say, but I about reach the point I don't put in as much faith in anything they say. I don't know. See, I just don't know. And I often say to you, God gave you 2 ears. One for it to go in and the other to go out. I let it go in one ear and I let it go out the other because I don't know what is what. Do you know what's what anymore? I don't think you do either. I don't think I do. I know we don't. But at any rate, cruelty, unnecessary cruelty, is abhorred by Jehovah. These nations are destroyed because of that. All right, now let's look at Moab. For thus saith Jehovah, for three transgressions of Moab, yea, for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because he burned the bones of the king of Edom in the line. Now, on that misuse of living people, well, here they took the bones of the king of Edom here, burned the bones into lime, the Moabite. It doesn't say that. I have imagined that they took that lime and made cement out of it and put it in a building. They could point to that building and say, we got the king of Edom over there in that building. Yeah, we got him in between the rocks there and the lime of his bones there. Well, we made cement out of it and put that rocks together. Something like that's what I imagine they would do with that. So they took his bones and burned them into lime. Naturally, they'd use that lime then in the building. So they'd say, we got the king of Edom over there in that building there. Of course, he's pretty well dead by the time he made bones into lime. But at any rate, and I know what God's going to do with them. But I will send a fire upon Moab, which shall devour one of the palaces of Kirioth, and that's the capital of Moab. And Moab shall die with tumult, with shouting, the shouting of battle and war, and the sound of the trumpet. And I will cut off the judge from the midst thereof, and will slay all the princes thereof, and with him saith Jehovah. All right. Now let's look at these six heathen nations here. Three of them are Ken's people. So he begins looking with Damascus, comes down to Gaza, goes up to the tower. Then he comes down here to Ammon, goes down to Edom, comes up to Moab in that. Taking the first three, those are no kin, the next three were kin. But all of these, the primary sin is that of cruelty and social injustice. Social injustice and cruelty. Well, a nation pays for that. And the social injustice and the mistreatment of the black people were brought over here as slaves, sold them and all. Now, not all the masters were cruel to the slaves in this country. Many of them treated them well, but not all of them. Some of them were very cruel to them and mistreated them. At any rate, it was wrong just to enslave an individual there. It's an interesting thing, though. You study the Bible, you never find where God specifically condemned slavery. What did he condemn? He condemned mistreatment and all that. And so maybe slavery in some instances was better than otherwise because they couldn't have made a living on their own. But at any rate, cruelty is a thing God condemned. Take people away from their homes and all that, enslave them, sell them to a foreign country. That's the cruelty of it. And it's not right anyway, but what God did was to outlaw it by teaching the right treatment of that to our fellow man. Now, I don't think you'll find slavery condemned, regulated, but not condemned. All right? Now you've got two more. I don't think I've got time to get into them. I don't have the time. No, I don't know to get into them. Now the next two, he comes on down to Judah. Now, I can imagine those Jews, while Amos was preaching against those foreigners there, and I imagine they would say, amen, brother. Amos, preach on now. You're doing a good job. When he got to Judah, wait a minute. Getting a little close to home, isn't he? Because he's getting on Judah now. Now when we get through with Judah, now he takes on Israel itself. He condemned that. Here's the difference. Now the difference is these heathen nations, the sins condemned among them are primarily for cruelty and social injustice. Now when it comes to Israel, now it also is for social injustice and all that, but at any rate, it's primarily because of their idolatry. Now, when it comes to Judah, here against Judah, it's because of their lies, that is, their idolatry, and their departure from God. Now, theirs is primarily religious. They left God out of their thinking. Then when it comes down to Israel, well, he points out there what they had done in their idolatry there. So the heathen nations, it was cruelty, social injustice, things of that nature. But Judah and Israel, if for forsaking the law of God. So whether a nation or people is the people of God, or whether it's a heathen people, God still rules over all of them. He rules in all realms. And if the heathen people are going to be condemned for what they do is wrong, how much more will God judge his own people who knew better? Here's another lesson we'll learn, is that God's relationship with mankind and his claiming that person gives to that person an added responsibility. So here then, the benefits that God gives us demands responsibility to handle these things aright. I think that's what we can see today. We look at our own nation. A nation that never was one so prosperous, never was one had such wonderful opportunities. And how that we've wasted the substance of God, how that we've used and misused all of this, how we're turning away from God today, demand that this nation be judged just as God has always judged nations to act like we're acting. You don't think we can get a lesson out of that? Don't think it ought to be a warning today? Don't think old Amos would be right at home preaching to us today? I think he would. Think before we get through, you would say that Amos would be right at home here in the United States preaching to this country today. I think he would. So I just take his place and do it for him, but I'm not preaching to very many, so it may not help very much. All right, the class is excused.